Mr. Allman, I want you to be advised that I know Mr. Bosworth of the law firm. Mr. Bosworth and I are not close personal friends of any kind. I've never been entertained in his home, and he's never been in mine. But we do serve together on a nonprofit charitable foundation board, the Board of Trustees of the Temple Buell Foundation, in which we meet, I think it's approximately four times a year. And that's how I came to know Mr. Bosworth. So if you have any concern about it, you'd ask for my recusal, please file a simple motion with the clerk after the hearing, and so state if you wish to do so.
Thank you, counsel. We're prepared when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Kathleen Byrne, and I'm representing the plaintiff's appellants in this appeal. With me today are Art Bosworth, sitting at council table, our paralegal.
Excuse me, your name?
Kathleen Byrne.
Speak it. Now keep your voice up, please.
I will try to do so.
Thank you.
Let's see if I can get this a little closer. With me is Mr. Art Bosworth, Betty Shire, our paralegal, plaintiff Edward Sabarbaro, and his wife Kathleen. This is the Equestrian Center case, a rare single-issue case concerning whether the trial court erred in granting the defendant's motion for directed verdict on plaintiff's claim for breach of warranty deed, when the undisputed zoning violations, including a use violation, in this case, rose to the level of an encumbrance that breached the covenant against encumbrances and the general warranty deed. Now, I'd like to address several things. First, the standard of review, the trial court's ruling, and then the law and facts of this case. As to the standard of review, the trial court granted the defendant's motion and denied our motion for directed verdict. As noted in the reply brief, the issue of whether a breach of warranty deed occurs is generally a question of fact. However, that the evidence at trial is, in my view, mischaracterized in the answer brief does not itself create an issue of fact. And so we argued in the trial court, and we maintain in the appeal, as we did in the opening brief, that the standard of review is a de novo review, and whether the legal significance of undisputed facts permits the entry of directed verdict in this case. So just to clarify that point. I'd like to just take a quick walk through the trial court's ruling as a way to illustrate some of the issues in this case. And I welcome your questions at any time, obviously. The trial court made a number of errors in its rulings, which show that there's some confusion between zoning violations and building code violations, and also that the trial court failed to see the use of the property as a possible zoning violation, as this court clearly did in the Fight case, and which actually controls the outcome in this case as well. For example, the trial court distinguished Fight and said, in the Fight case, the buyers could not even list the property for sale because there was no certificate of occupancy. That is very different from here, from the alleged breach of warranty by the existence of building restrictions. Now, this case is not really about building restrictions. It's about zoning violations. And it's important to distinguish the two, as was done in Fight. Zoning violations may constitute an encumbrance. Building code violations, on the other hand, are generally technical violations, difficult to see, and typically are not encumbrances.
Counsel, how significant must a zoning violation be before it becomes an encumbrance?
At least as significant as in Fight. In Fight, it required the building of a new garage on the property, a detached garage. And here we have at least that level of significance in physical zoning violations and also in the use violation.
Well, in connection with the physical violations, is there any basis for comparing the expense of fixing the violations in your case versus the Fight case?
Do you mean an evidentiary basis, or I believe that the removal of various structures within the buildings on the property may have been the subject of testimony in terms of what it would have cost to alter those structures, to remove the two-bedroom apartment, the bathrooms. There was also a setback violation on an indoor riding arena of about 500 feet, so that structure would have to be moved in order to remedy the zoning violation. In fight, the damages were, I believe, $6,000. So if that is the measure of the significance of the zoning violations, then, and that's $1,992, I think that we could safely presume that that amount was exceeded here, although ultimately that would be an issue for the trial court on remand.
Is there any difference because this was a conservation easement? I say, is there any difference because this is a conservation easement that we have here?
The conservation easement only spoke to the building of residential structures.
And the residential structures, as I read it, or any other structure which are not necessary to an agricultural use.
That's right.
And also that agriculturally related buildings and structures may be permitted if they are not used for residential purposes.
That's right.
Does that make any difference because it's a conservation easement in your argument?
Well, that addresses only some portion of what were also zoning violations in this case. Mm-hmm. There was the residential issue, but really, in the context of an equestrian center, you're looking at overnight accommodations more than residences. What does residence mean in the conservation easement? This is something that wasn't actually decided by the trial court. Does it mean full-time living situation? Does someone have to build a separate dwelling to violate the conservation easement? I think that the conservation easement does not really speak to the issue of whether the covenant of against encumbrances was breached here. I think that those issues can be separated.
Answer this question for me. I think there was testimony from an expert real estate attorney for the defendant saying this is not an encumbrance. And you had evidence, I think, presented from the Boulder County Land Use Department and others pretty clearly indicating there was at least some kind of zoning violation in existence. Why isn't that simply an issue of fact for the jury as opposed to a justification for your request for judgment as a matter of law that this is an encumbrance?
The facts underlying the zoning violation label or the encumbrance label were undisputed. And according to the directed verdict standard that I've cited in my brief, where there are undisputed facts, but the legal significance of those facts is the only issue to be determined, then that can be decided by the trial court.
Well, is it your view that there was no issue at all for the jury to decide on whether this was a breach of the general warranty?
Yes, given the undisputed facts in the case.
Well, if you have an expert for the defendant testifying that this is the property was saleable, there was no breach of warranty, doesn't that create an issue of fact?
Well, I think that that is testimony as to a legal issue. So
it's admitted though. It was admitted at trial. It went to the, at least it was evidence in the case.
Right, but it still doesn't create an issue of fact if the testimony is as to an issue of law. Issues of law are for the court.
Was there an objection lodged to that testimony?
I don't believe there was an objection.
Excuse me one moment.
The court is obviously getting to the heart of the issues in this case, which I'm grateful for. Okay. Again, the trial court repeatedly referred to building code violations as being dispositive in her determination of whether there was an encumbrance in this case. The court said that the sale of the property with structures in violation of a building code is not a breach of the covenant in terms of encumbrances. We agree, but that's not relevant to the determination that was to be made at this, in this case. The court also said that in fight, and this is a point I would like to explore, the zoning the existing zoning violations rendered the title unmarketable because of the lack of certificate of occupancy. And therefore, muddling the issues between physical zoning violations and use violations. And that, I would say, is the principal error in the trial court's analysis in this case, that the court saw the fight case as only a physical zoning violation case, but made repeated reference to the certificate of occupancy issue, which speaks to a use violation in zoning. So there was both physical violations because there was no detached garage built, but there was also use violation because the property could not be occupied as the seller's representative could be by no doubt showing it the property as a home. And this issue is actually addressed in fight, and because of the time, I'd like to just jump directly to that citation in fight where they quote Powell on real property. And this is at pages 411 to 412. Where construction on or use of the premises at the time of the conveyance already violates a restriction, that is a land use restriction, the purchaser may assume that it is permitted and a breach of the covenant against encumbrances will occur. Fight has already acknowledged the importance of use violations, and that was the significant and very damaging violation in this case. The Urichs had used the property and shown the property as an equestrian center. That was the use of the property at the time of the sale. In fact, that use of the property could not be made. And under the language in fight, that itself is a breach of the covenant against encumbrances, in addition to all of the physical zoning violations. Judge Miller.
Had the Urichs boarded more than 15 horses or whatever the cutoff was?
The cutoff is actually 15 different owners of horses. It's a limitation on owners. And at the time of the sale, there were 26 owners. The answer is yes. They had exceeded the limit and brought themselves within the definition of an equestrian center, although that was a violation of the zoning law. If I may, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve my remaining 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Allman, number 8184, attorney for the appellees, Darrell and Wendy Urich. The key to this case, from our perspective, is that this is not a warranty deed case. This is an issue, as was tried and by the jury, of whether there were misrepresentations made by the sellers of the property. The key factor here is that this property did not have it was not a building lot. And under Boulder's interpretation of its zoning law, which admittedly was disputed by our expert, but if we assume that Boulder was correct, it can't be an equestrian center because it doesn't have a building lot. This property was sold with the knowledge that it was an agricultural outlot burdened by a conservation easement. Was made very clear that there were limited uses on this property. We would submit that it cannot be a violation of a warranty deed for the property, for the deed to have failed to convey something that it could not possibly convey. The warranty deed cannot convey a building lot to the buyer. It doesn't exist. The warranty deed did convey an agricultural zoned outlot burdened by a conservation easement.
Mr. Ullman, first of all, was there a general warranty deed under section 3830113?
Yes, with the mine, there were...
Well, let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
Yes. The next deed, did the deed state that the defendants warrant title to the property and its appurtenance subject to taxes and assessments for the year 2004, a lien not yet due and payable in all matters of record? Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. The fact that it was a statutory form warranty deed, would that have any effect on this case?
In this situation, Your Honor, the form of statutory warranty deed was also modified in the last paragraph in that it said that the warranty was provided that they would warrant title and defend against all others subject to matters of record. It means that the property, and that, in our view, means that the property was also came subject to the zoning laws and requirements of Boulder, and in effect, the property was able to be used as it was zoned. And it's the key distinction between the Fight case, where residential property was transferred, but it couldn't be used as residential property because it did not have a certificate of occupancy. In this case, the property had all of the uses that Boulder zoning allowed to it.
Was it a matter of record, Mr. Ullman, that there were zoning violations in existence at the time?
No, Your Honor, and we would submit the only zoning violations as stated by the Boulder Land Use Department are of the nature of a building permit. While the UREX may have had for some temporal time more than 15 outside borders, none of those borders were such, there were no written contracts. The issue of whether the number of borders could be reduced was a simple matter of, okay, then we'll have the borders leave. There's no alteration of the property. There's nothing that would say that there is any sort of matter that would need to be altered or adjusted. The only matter as to the physical real estate would be the unpermitted bath in the hay barn, which the only testimony as to any kind of price was Mr. Urick testified that he spent about $2,000 upon it. But it's obvious that is a simple building code violation. It has nothing to do with whether you can use the property as an agricultural property. And you are allowed to board horses on the property, but there was a limit on the number of horses that could be boarded.
Well, if there's no zoning violation noted of record, wouldn't you agree that the purchaser doesn't take the property with notice of that defect?
With regard to knowing what the zoning allows, the purchaser definitely takes property with notice of that. The purchaser has to know that this property, the realtor told the purchaser, there's an equestrian center regulation, check it out. Make sure it applies to you. That's the issue. And if there were that particular violation, if the simple issue is, well, then fine, we'll remove the number of borders on the property or restructure your ownership of the property in some fashion to accommodate that. But I believe that these purchasers took knowing that there was an equestrian center regulation and it had certain limitations.
Well, let me follow up with Judge Casebolt's question with a different look at it. Could reasonable persons disagree as to whether the evidence showed that defendants breached the warranty of title against encumbrances?
I don't believe so in this case, Your Honor. And the reason for that is that the number of horse borders is not an issue that in our view would impact the deed. The only issue would be that of the building code violation, which doesn't, according to Fight, rise to the level of a breach of the warranty deed. And where the warranty deed can't actually convey, according to Boulder, that particular use, how can it be a violation of the warranty deed? I fully understand how it can be an issue of misrepresentation.
Well, I'm just speaking of reasonable persons, not all persons. But let me follow that up with another question. Another division of this court, in a case called MDM Group Associates, 165 Pacific 3rd at 882, made the statement that a motion for a directed verdict should not be granted unless the evidence compelled the conclusion that reasonable jurors could not disagree and that no evidence or inference has been received at trial upon which a verdict against the moving party could be sustained. Would you like to speak to that particular case?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the court properly held to that standard. And I believe that the court here considered the issue of the fact that the property was conveyed with all of its uses. There was no specific right conveyed that would say you have some right to have X number of horse borders or X number of horses on the property. In fact, the property could have up to 280 horses on it. So the issue of the issue of whether it could be used as an equestrian center or not isn't the matter of the deed, because the deed can't convey that. The issues of how many horses, of how many outside borders you can have, is a matter of contract or representation, but not a matter of the deed. And I believe that that's why the court properly found under that standard that reasonable people could not otherwise.
The standard conclude. Which I was referring to was that should not be granted, the directive verdict should not be granted unless the evidence compels the conclusion that reasonable jurors could not disagree. Now, that's why I emphasize the word reasonable.
Right. I do think that the court did take the proper view because of the underlying legal issue that the deed itself could not convey this use in any event. So therefore, it now becomes a building code issue case. That's what it became for that purpose. The plaintiff's lookout had its other arguments of, well, I was promised this and I was promised a bigger use, but it isn't because the deed promised. And I think that the policy that would be that was of concern and Fight of putting deeds in position where people can later challenge them and people are not sure of the title with which they get was served in the trial court's ruling, because the issues, I do not think that it's good in the real estate industry for people to argue, well, I was promised a bigger use than that which can legally be conveyed, so therefore I'm going to use the deed argument, as opposed to looking at, well, what did the contract say, what were you promised, what was your due diligence, what were you on duties, which is I think the more appropriate way to view this type of real estate transaction.
Mr. Altman, Ms. Burns said that there was and it's in their briefs, a set-off violation, and that I think the stable building was too close to the property line, and she indicated that that would have to move 500 feet. Isn't that a zoning violation?
No, that's actually that is a mischaracterization. The barn was properly permitted, and it's within 100 feet of the building line. And Graham Billingsley testified as to this. The argument about whether it needed to be more than 500 feet from the building line had to do with whether it initially had a permit which allowed it to be a riding academy, because in 1992 or through 1994, when it was being constructed, there was a different sort of regulation. But it wasn't illegal to have it be positioned where it was. It did have, it does have a proper building permit.
I mean, it would have to be moved in order to be used for a riding academy, but it wouldn't have to be moved to be used as a barn.
Right, to be used as private stables, or to, and also to be used for the ordinary agricultural purposes that were allowed by the conservation easement. It was simply addressed because of the argument of that had been raised by the defendants, the Urichs, that said, look, we told Boulder what we were going to do when we got the permit for the barn, which was we were raising cutting horses and we're going to do some training of them. And so it was raised some 12 years after the fact. Well, gee, if we had intended to permit you as a riding academy, one of the issues is the setback line should have been 500 feet rather than 100 feet. Although they conceded, well, since you did get a permit, in effect, we waived that if that were to be the case. But that gets down to the factual issues of should it really have been allowed to have been a riding academy or an equestrian center in any event. But if for purposes of this argument, we're presuming that there is this violation, it can't be an equestrian center, there is no issue of whether the barn itself was not permanent as far as lot lines go.
Dealing with Boulder is a nebulous proposition.
It can be. And they conceded that in part of the transcript in this matter. If there are no more questions, I would point out a few issues that, as presented in FITE, people do need to be secure about their title. The purpose of a deed is not to try to help people have creative arguments that say that, because I had some other promise and it was some sort of a business deal that went along with the transfer, that somehow I actually get something more than a real estate deed can actually convey, because the fee was conveyed. The uses are allowed as the zoning existed, and this is totally contrary to the FITE situation where the person couldn't utilize their residential property as a residence. And I think it's a key distinction. I think that trial court properly ruled as a matter of law, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I have 3 minutes and 4 points, so let's see how fast I can address these matters. A warranty deed claim is a claim under the law. Whether there's a misrepresentation claim is not the issue. There is a claim called breach of warranty deed, and the Urichs made a warranty in this deed, and they covenanted against encumbrances on the property. That's a separate claim which has separate elements, and the issue of whether there was a misrepresentation is not really related. The question about the warranty deed is, does it conveys a property. It conveys an address. The deed itself does not address the use of the property, but clearly under FITE, the use of a property is bundled in with the deed. In FITE, there was an undisputed zoning violation. Here we have undisputed multiple zoning violations. There were physical and use violations in FITE. Here we have physical and use violations. In FITE, the deed did not specify the use of the property only for residential purposes, and the deed here did not specify that the use was only for an equestrian center purposes. The intended use of the property in FITE was obvious, and it was the same use at the time of the sale as at the time the problems began. Here, in this case, the intended use of the property was obvious at the time of the sale, and the plaintiffs tried to maintain that use. And that's where the problems began. In fight, there was no variance that could be secured to address the zoning violation. Here, there was no zoning, no variance that could be secured to address the zoning violation. The difference between this case and fight is that in fight, they could build a detached garage and fix the zoning violation. And here, the zoning violation could not be fixed. They could make structural changes, but the use violation could not be fixed. The use made of this property by the Urichs, and at the time of the sale, and at the time of the problems for the plaintiff, was the same, and it was not permitted. And under fight, and the language that I quoted earlier from Powell on real estate, the use violation is actionable as a breach of the covenant against encumbrances. Thank you for letting me get through those issues. What other questions can I address for you?
Here's, we have no others, Ms. Byrne.
Let me just close by saying, if this court discerns that the issue really is a question of fact, if that is the issue that the court would prefer to address, then rather than handling it as a competing motions for directed verdict, then we will happily take a remand to address questions of fact as to zoning violations and also as to the damages caused to the plaintiff in this case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you both for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course. That concludes the docket for the morning. We'll be in recess. The bailiff may announce it.